Welcome to Let's Talk Arts. I'm Pia Catton. Today, we are going to look at the big summer story in the arts, what is happening at the Metropolitan Opera. We'll have two guests, Wall Street Journal reporter Jennifer Maloney, followed by President and CEO of Opera America, Mark Skorka, right after this.
I'm Lex Friedman. I run my own business, so I know from experience, hiring new employees can be tough. Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites, and now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 50-plus job sites, including Craigslist, LinkedIn, and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 200,000 businesses. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. That's ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. One more time. To try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ.
Welcome back. We are now joined by Jennifer Maloney. Welcome, Jen.
Thanks.
This is so exciting to sit with you here and talk about this stuff. You've been working so hard. You've been covering this story top to bottom. Let's just start with some of the basics. The Met season is scheduled to open on September 22nd with the new production of Marriage of Figaro. The contracts for 15 of the 16 unions were supposed to expire last week. The Met had threatened a lockout. Jen, why did that not happen?
Well, the Met brought in a federal mediator at the 11th hour on Thursday afternoon, right as the contracts were about to expire. The mediator basically got them to agree to a 72-hour reprieve through the weekend. And then over the weekend, the Met and two of its unions representing singers and orchestra members agreed, we're going to take a step back. We're going to bring in an independent financial analyst to examine the Met's books and provide a confidential report to the unions and to the Met. And from there, we're going to move forward. So now we're looking at another week before they're going to hit another deadline.
Did they set another deadline?
They didn't set a hard deadline. They said it's going to take a week for the independent financial analyst to look at the books. And from there, they'll move forward.
Okay. So from your perspective, what does the financial audit really mean? Who's the winner? Who's the loser? Or are there even winners and losers at this point?
Well, one of the biggest problems so far in this debate has been that the two sides have very different views of what the Met's actual financial position is. Peter Gelb, the general manager of the Metropolitan Opera, has said that he needs to do a financial reset of the company. He says, look, the costs are going up. Ticket sales are going down. We've been drawing heavily on the endowment. This is unsustainable. We have to change something sort of fundamentally about how we do business. So he had proposed some really deep cuts from the pay of the musicians and the stagehands, the singers. The union leaders had said, now, wait a second. You've been spending more and more and more on new productions, on new technology, and in their view, spending excessively on things like overtime that they feel is unnecessary. Hmm. They say, you shouldn't be paying for those problems out of our paychecks.
Right.
So the two sides really had different views on what the Met's financial position was and what would be the prudent solution. So bringing in an independent financial analyst allows both sides to sort of set aside their own views on what the Met's sort of finances are and sort of listen to this expert who may provide a framework for moving forward, may provide some recommendations, may say, yes, the unions do need to take a certain amount of concessions. And that will sort of be a starting point for their discussions.
So do you think the financial analyst is going to say something like, okay, Peter Gelb, you spent way too much money on the ring. That thing was just absurdly expensive. It was giant. It didn't work half the time. What's up with that?
Certainly the analyst is probably going to be looking at spending on new productions.
Okay.
Because the budget for the Met has grown to last year, $327 million compared to $222 million in 2006 when Peter Gelb took the helm. So the budget has expanded by leaps and bounds. And that's a combination of investments in new productions, in technology to do the HD broadcasts in movie theaters around the country, and also things like, you know, refurbishing the gift shop and in investing more in marketing.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly the new productions are something that a lot of Gelb's critics and union leaders have said he needs to rein in, because spending on new productions is more than just building a giant machine like The Ring, but it also means more rehearsals, more overtime, more labor costs.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of cascades.
But that is really catch-22, isn't it? Because that's what we write about a lot as a new production. You know, the Met is starting off its season with this new production of The Marriage of Figaro, and that's what makes opera exciting. Seeing something new, seeing a new director have a new take on a very old show.
And that's Peter Gelb's point, is that if you want to generate excitement, if you want to get press coverage, if you want to get new people into the seats, you have to give them something new, something to talk about, something
right.
that's going to sort of be buzzy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, his approach when he took the helm of the Met in 2006 was, I'm going to spend and invest in new productions. And his theory was the revenue would follow, the ticket sales would follow. And they did for a few years. The
mm-hmm.
problem was that the costs kept going up, but the revenue plateaued and the ticket sales started to slump. So that's the quandary he finds himself in now.
Let's talk for a minute about the HD broadcasts, because they seem to be successful and attracting people to the opera. People are definitely talking about them, but he raises another point.
Right. So they are beamed to movie theaters around the world. They've reached countless numbers of people. However, he has acknowledged that in the northeast of the United States, between Boston and D.C., there are folks who are maybe going to see it in a movie theater and are not coming to Lincoln Center in New York, when in the past they may have. So he has sort of attributed a certain amount of cannibalization of actual in-the-house ticket sales to the HD program. Now, he says that at the same time, there may be more visitors coming from around the world to the Met who were sort of introduced to the Met through the movie theater projections. But some union leaders say, look, to get the best of both worlds here, you should have a blackout in the northeast of the United States, and you should not be presenting it in movie theaters close to New York.
There you go, Midwest, flyover states. We're going to beam more opera out to you because we can't sustain the amount of opera in broadcast and on stage that's happening currently on the East Coast. So we have consumed our maximum, it looks like. Right?
We may have
to send some opera out to West Virginia. Well, let's hope there's a market for it. And I'm from West Virginia, so I can say that. The opera is supposed to open on the 22nd. Again, if you had to bet right now, what would you say the chances are of the curtain going up as planned?
Right now, it's looking a lot better than it did a week ago.
Okay.
When they were approaching the Thursday night deadline, things looked pretty grim. But the fact that a mediator came in and B, they are now bringing in an independent financial analyst means that they have stepped back from the brink.
Okay.
They've taken a deep breath. They've sort of agreed to work together to try to find some common ground. So I think it's looking a lot more positive that the curtain will come up on September 22nd.
Well, there you have it. Jen, thank you so much for joining us today on Let's Talk Arts.
Thanks, Pia.
So our next guest is President and CEO of Opera America, Mark Skorka. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thanks so much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Mark, can you just explain for our listeners what Opera America is and its function within the industry?
Absolutely. Opera America is the national umbrella organization for the opera industry. We have thousands of members that include virtually every professional opera company in the United States, universities and conservatories, hundreds of artists and thousands of people who love opera. We try to connect people and build collaborations, cooperation. We hope that our work in funding new works and collaborative marketing activities build the audience, build the repertoire, and raise the level of excellence across the entire field.
Okay. So from that perspective, when the general manager of the Metropolitan Opera, Peter Gelb, says that opera has a popularity problem, you must have had a bit of a heart attack, right? I mean, you know, from my perspective, you know, I write about ballet, sometimes I write about jazz, sometimes I write about horse racing. These are things that really have, you know, popularity problems. But opera seems to be pretty good. I have plenty of anecdotes, but How about some facts from you, Mark?
Oh, you know, it is such a complicated question. Opera is a multimedia art form in a multimedia world. It has an allure of larger-than-life emotions and characters and stories. And opera has been attracting new audiences for decades. That's not to say that our traditional opera companies haven't seen a decline in ticket sales in recent years.
Okay.
They have. Our data shows that the audience that pays to see grand opera at grand opera companies has declined. At the same time, we have some opera companies that have set new ticket records for sales where subscriptions are picking up. And we also have just a wonderful number of stories about opera companies that are reaching outside of the opera house with mm-hmm. exciting programming that attracts new audiences.
What's an example of that?
Well, I just had a conversation with the general director of the opera company in Madison, Wisconsin.
All right.
And every year, Madison Opera does a concert in the big park in Madison. And this year they had a record-breaking number of people that represented 6% of the city's population. It was an enormous success. San Francisco on July 5th, they transmitted a performance of Madama Butterfly from the Opera House to the baseball stadium, and they had nearly 30,000 people there. It was
wow.
for free. People
Massive.
Brought their families and stayed on the main field all day to see the performance of Madama Butterfly.
Now, let's talk about HD broadcast, because that is one of these issues that, you know, people say, well, it's bringing in new people, it's bringing in new audience members. Some people say it's cannibalizing. What's your take?
What I have found, and first of all, I have to say that the Med-HD transmissions are brilliantly done. The camera work, the opportunity to see these wonderful operas with great singers up close at movie theaters around the world is just a tremendous accomplishment. What I have found is that the HD transmissions are satisfying opera lovers who mm-hmm. can't get enough.
Okay.
There were, and still are, thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people, who listened to the Saturday afternoon radio broadcasts from the Metropolitan Opera.
Right, that was a classic.
The longest radio program known on the face of the earth. So a lot of those people who are used to dedicating their Saturdays to the opera, instead of listening to it at home, now go see it in the movie theaters. It is a tremendous opportunity for opera lovers to see repertoire they haven't seen, see singers they can't see in their hometown.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say that it has introduced opera to lots of new people,
okay.
because many of these transmissions are filled by the opera lovers who buy their tickets early on in the sales cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I think there are some older people who have found these HD transmissions to be a viable alternative to going out at night on their own to the opera house.
Mm-hmm.
They are wonderfully convenient.
They
daytime,
yeah.
Big comfortable seats. You can mm-hmm. bring food into the theater. You are close up to the action. The volume is loud.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of people, it is much easier and, of course, more cost-effective to go and spend an afternoon that way than to get a little bit more dressed up, pay more money, and go downtown to the opera house at mm-hmm. night and go home, you know, by 11 o'clock or midnight.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, among some senior citizen attendants,
mm-hmm.
we've seen a decline at our opera companies in favor of the HD transmissions.
Interesting. Okay. Let's turn to the Met and its union negotiations. You have probably seen this play out in different cities with different companies. What are some success stories that we could point to and say, you know, the Met is having an issue right now, but it could resolve itself the way that blank city did?
There have been a series of successful negotiations in Chicago at the Lyric Opera of Chicago, in San Francisco at San Francisco Opera, and certainly in the past couple of decades at the Metropolitan Opera. All of our opera companies have negotiations of various intensity throughout the year. The fact that we don't hear a lot about those union negotiations means that issues are being resolved rather amicably.
Okay, so that's good.
Here we have a situation where there are real differences in points of view, the Met and its unions, and it has become a highly publicized negotiation, so it's one we're talking about. But listeners have to recognize that there are dozens of negotiations going on throughout the year, and the fact that we don't hear about them is good news.
Okay, so no news is good news, like the old cliche goes. It's
true. Absolutely, in this case.
All right. So again, another point that you could bring some perspective to, you see opera all over the world, all over the country. What are you looking forward to this season at the Met, given the assumption that the season does go off as planned? What would you like to see?
Oh, my goodness. You know, there are, you know, so many operas that I'm looking forward to, not only at the Metropolitan Opera, but around the country. One of the things that, you know, we Opera America has as a core value is the encouragement and the production of new American opera. Mm. And there are so many new American operas being premiered at members across the country, or second and subsequent productions of operas that have already premiered recently that are being performed by our member companies. At the Met this season, the production of The Death of Klinghoffer
is controversial.
A noteworthy and a controversial production. John Adams' opera is a magnificent work of music, and it, of course, touches on an enormously difficult subject, which is the subject of terrorism and inhuman violence of person against person. So this is a piece that will have tremendous local and national resonance. But there are other wonderful operas all over the country premiering from coast to coast and opera companies large and small.
So what's another American opera or a work by an American composer that we should focus on?
Sure. We have in Santa Fe this coming summer a production of Cold Mountain by Jennifer Higdon. The Lyric Opera of Chicago is preparing a new opera, Bel Canto, based on the novel. They're also commissioning a new mariachi opera from a wonderful mariachi ensemble in Mexico.
Are they going to come to my dinner and play that?
Oh, no, no, it's bigger scale than your dinner. The Dallas Opera this fall is premiering a new work called Everest by Joby Talbot. In Philadelphia, an opera, Oscar, that is premiered last summer in Santa Fe is having a reprise in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. Houston Grand Opera has had a wonderful American premiere of a composer Weinberg's long-suppressed Holocaust opera, The Passenger. It was in Houston this season. It came to the Lincoln Center Festival this summer and is going to Chicago this coming season.
Okay.
So all over the country, coast to coast, there are exciting American operas, new operas, and second and subsequent productions of works that have already premiered.
So it sounds like there's a lot of energy, there's a lot of creativity in opera, and you see a lot of it. What do you do when you're tired of opera? Do you ever get tired of opera? And what lowbrow pleasures do you allow yourself to have, Mark?
Oh, you know, I do get tired of opera from time to time, and I enjoy going to the ballet because I'm sitting in a beautiful theater listening to beautiful music, but no one is singing to me. I love the fact that in the ballet there are no words.
No words.
Sometimes that's the way I'll kick back and relax a little bit.
Okay, well, thank you for joining us, Mark. I really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure. Thanks so much for speaking with me.
And thanks so much for listening to Let's Talk Arts. I'm Pia Catton.